The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Brian, hi.
Hey, Gene.
Hey, good. It's been a crazy day. I've actually done, since last night, 3 interviews, and I had to do a DVD review, and I just came back from another appointment that I was outside for, so it's nuts.
Oh, no.
Busy,
huh?
Yeah. So how are things going on your end? How's the weather out in Pennsylvania?
The weather's great. For once, the last couple of days, it's been nice. How about your weather?
It's not bad. I think the allergies have really kicked in.
Oh, yeah, my wife's dying here.
But right now it's kind of warm out and sunny, and everything is good. I guess if everything is ready on your end, we can get rolling.
Sure.
Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight, a long-lost band comes back from the dead as we present Dream Death, The Resurrection. I'm Big Papa Online Network, and I'm Blog Talk Radio. Feature a return engagement I don't think many listeners were expecting to hear. A man who is the driving force behind a band whose sole studio album has gained a reputation unparalleled in underground metal, an album which has gone for high prices on the collector's market, a true classic which has become quite revered and influential among fans of thrash, doom, and death metal alike for its unique approach and dark, snarling aggression. After dropping out of the music industry at the dawn of the 90s, he moved on with his life and pursued other interests outside of music. Last year, I invited him on the show as one of many bands whose albums I treasured from back in the days of the heyday of metal to discuss his brief but important career in the metal underground. During that interview, he mentioned that he was kicking around the idea of putting together some new material. Nearly 1 year later, we have the result, a surprisingly powerful record that simultaneously looks back to the past and forward to new horizons. Please join us as we speak once again with guitarist and vocalist Brian Lawrence of the band Dream Death, only here on Third Eye Cinema. In our first segment, we talk about how the project came together, the various musical influences that are being referenced in their sound, and some philosophy on music per se. But before we get into that, here's my favorite song of Somnium Excessum. This is Feast. We'll be right back. Tonight we're talking metal. And we have with us a return engagement I don't think many people out there would be expecting. We have with us a man who more or less dropped out of the music industry since the dawn of the 90s, a man whose band released only one album to date, but one that gained a very strong reputation, if not influence, over the revivalist metal scene, and to this day stands as a true classic among both underground and doom metal. After involvement in only one further recording with a long-running band which emerged from the ashes of that storied group, he moved on with his life and pursued other interests outside of music. Last year is one of many bands whose albums I treasured from back in the heyday of metal. I contacted him and had him on air to discuss his brief but important career in the metal underground, at which time he mentioned that he was kicking around the idea of putting together some new material. So nearly 1 year later, we have the result. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming back guitarist and vocalist Brian Lawrence of the band Dream Death. Brian, welcome back to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, Gene. How you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Here we are again, and you did, in fact, deliver as promised. The new Dream Death album is here, and it only took 26 years.
Hopefully it won't take that long for the next one. But
let's talk Somnium Excessum, which, if my Latin holds up, translates to sleep unto excess, which is simultaneously quite appropriate and, on the other hand, a bit odd. What motivated the choice of album title?
That was, I don't want to say it was a joke, but it was kind of a joke. That was my take on what the translation was for Dream Death. So it was just calling that, just as between all our emails going back and forth, you know, hey, when we're working on Somnium Excessum, you know. And we knew it actually wasn't the correct translation, and so then when we had all the material done, we took a vote on what we should call the album, and everybody voted for that. So it just kind of stuck. But
so this is a 6-song release, but like all the best doom metal albums, features a few fairly long songs. Two push the 7-minute mark, and one runs about 12. So do you consider it an EP because of the track amount, or do you full-fledged album because of the total time?
I look at the total time. I'm kind of, my personal preference is an album should be around 40 minutes, a little bit under, a little bit over. Even like if I, you know, if there's a band I love and they put out a 70-minute album, I usually find, you know, it's just not like one comfortable sitting or something, unless it was an intentional double album or so forth. So I think we always kind of try to shoot for around 40 minutes, and it kind of worked out that way for us. So I consider it an LP.
It's interesting how little things seem to have changed after 25 years removed. Allowing for some changes in the sound, this could have easily been a follow-up to Journey into Mystery back around 88 or 89. And mind you, you'd already changed fairly dramatically stylistically between Journey and the Ode to Sorrow demo, so even fans who might be shaking their heads about that statement might not realize how much closer Somnium Excessum to Journey into Mystery than what actually followed.
Yeah, I mean, that was my intention. Not to copy what was done in the past, but definitely to have that sound. You know, I think I've told many people, like, why even call it Dream Death if it doesn't sound like Dream Death, you know?
Right.
We could have just started another band, you know, and continued in some other direction or continued as Penance or whatever. But,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sound we were shooting for.
While tracks like Feast clearly hold firmly to the standard Dream Death sound with an equal influence of bands like Cirith Uncle and Celtic Frost, there's definitely a lot of the Penance sound bleeding in as well. There's parts and tracks like Dystopian Distress Signal and You're Gonna Die Up There that herald more of like a Caius influence, maybe a dash of Trouble. You know, it's more bluesy and psychedelic, at least in the solo sections.
Yeah, that wasn't really intentional. Dystopian Distress Signal, we knew putting that one on there was going to be kind of, some people might not like that one, I guess, you know, maybe it's a little, like you're saying, maybe like a little more bluesy in the middle or, you know, a little more groove-oriented, but we kind of just put it as a continuity type thing, like, you know, we had the track before, the track after, we're kind of more in a doom vein, so we kind of want to mix it up with something a little more up-tempo there.
And all that still is in that basic area of doom, groove, stoner metal, whatever you want to call it, it's all got that kind of slow and heavy vibe, you know, a little trippy, so it all fits.
Yeah, I do my best to try to make it not stoner. not because I don't like it, but just because it seems like there's a lot of bands that do it, you know. So I try to avoid that. And when we're writing the songs, I always say, "This is starting to sound like stoner. Let's not do that," you know, or something. But you're telling me some of it still does, so I guess it's hard to avoid.
Well, it's just a little bit filtering. I think it's more in the solos on a couple of songs. Not everywhere. It's just,
yeah. And Terry's style probably is a little bit more in that vein. He's definitely acclimated to the doom stylings and so forth, like a Penance. And Penance was definitely a lot of his baby, you know. So, yeah, you're going to get that bleeding in there for sure.
But that said, it's still very much a Dream Death record. You know, I think the major thing longtime fans should keep in mind is that the new album comes off less like a return to Journey into Mystery, per se, than the earlier demos. You know, Dream Death and more Graveyard Delving, which is the material available on your Back from the Dead compilation or the Pittsburgh Sludge Metal Live album. It's like you actually went further back to your roots here.
Yeah, I guess we're trying to take it in different directions a little bit. Maybe just, I guess what kind of got me back into Dream Death was that some of that early stuff, like I always use the example Meet Thy Maker, you know, it kind of sounds a little bit messed up, we always use that terminology or something, and you know, it's in a little different time signature. So we were definitely trying to lean in that direction where things got a little, especially like on a track like You're Gonna Die Up There, we were trying to go all over the map with changes and time signature changes and so forth. So I hope that it's a nod to the past, and yet I hope it's a little bit forward-thinking, too, at the same time.
It's definitely a progression. It's just I'm finding things that say, you know what, this reminds me of here, that reminds me of there, because otherwise it's like, well, I don't know. Wait, how do you describe this? Where are they going with this?
Yeah. And as Mike always says, whenever I end up writing riffs or whatever, it just can't help but sounding like Dream Death. He always says everything I do, tapes over the years, it's just me goofing around the house, you know, trying to do different things. And he says, sounds like Dream Death. I'm like, oh, geez, okay.
But
I guess I can't escape it.
But I think that's a good thing. You know, like we discussed last time I had you on the show, I thought something about the production and feel on Journey and the Mystery was a bit off, you know, more subdued or even flat by comparison to a lot of our demo versions. And that brings us to the production here. I don't know how much of this boils down to the studio versus the role of the producer, but there's a mix of sludginess to the thick downtuned guitars that we've come to expect from Dream Death, and a surprising crispness to the vocals and drums, particularly on the hi-hat and snare, but it's all over the high end. The cymbals are very prominent as well. So a question for you, is the Mr. Small studio an appendage to drummer Mike Smale's drum shop, which you also advertise in the album?
No. Mike's drum shop, Smale's Custom Drums, is actually, we consider that the label that put us out because he's handling all the production costs and so forth. So, you know, so he actually put out, he has a side project called Under the Sun, which is like a kind of like doom metal project that he did. And that was a release he put out on his label. So this is the second release on his label. But as far as the studio, though, that, you know, that's just the sound we've always wanted for Dream Death anyway. And we just were never able to get it, really.
Right.
You know, so we took our time. We were more meticulous. We know what we're doing a little, you know, a little older, know what we're doing a little more. And definitely the Larry Luther, the guy running, the engineer at Mr. Smalls, knew what he was doing, too. He was very sharp. So it all turned out pretty good.
What's interesting to me, at least, is that despite being a very professional product on both the audio end and the visual packaging, there's technically, as far as I could see anyway, but you're telling me there's no label associated with all this. You know, you guys actually self-released the album. So, and this is a loaded question, given our interview last time and the whole new Renaissance affair. What kind of challenges or advantages does this bring to the band as opposed to working with a label per se?
Well, it's probably just a matter of time. You know, it's easier to put something out now for sure. You know, with the internet, you can get your word out there. You're bringing up New Renaissance. Yeah, we're a little gun-shy. We just decided. The question came up one time between Mike and myself, and I said, so are we going to shop this around to labels? And he's like, no, let's put it out ourselves. And I said, all right. You know, that was the end of the conversation, really. It started out well because I don't think, obviously, CDs are slowly dwindling and so forth and everything, but right. We sold a fair amount, and it's been going okay, but it seems like people are really waiting for the vinyl to come out, which we're going to put that out on Spark Records here, so I guess we have an association with the label in that way, but all the production costs and all the CD costs and the art costs, that was all just handled by us. So.
Wow.
It was a lot of work. To answer your question.
Like I mentioned at the outset, you have the entire band represented, minus original bassist Ted Williams, who I believe you mentioned was responsible for the cover art and the demos back when. But your second bass player, Richard Freund, has been with you since the Ode to Sorrow demo from 1988. And, of course, the entire band went on to Penance thereafter for the Road Less Traveled. But that said, both you and Richard haven't really been involved in the music business since that album back in 1992. So what inspired you guys to get the whole band back together and more or less go back to the original sound? Was it the re-releases of the demos and live material, or did I actually inspire you to do this for the interview last year?
it just started out as fun. If you ask me, Mike and myself just did an interview together with somebody, I think it's the first time we did an interview together, and we were disagreeing with how the whole ball got rolling, so if you're asking me, I'll give you my version of the story. He put out the demo several years ago, and he asked me to write the liner notes. This kind of leads back to what I was saying about how my personal taste, I kind of like a little bit more dark and complex music. That's kind of just where I'm at now,
right,
the last few years. And then, you know, when I was listening to those demos, I was like, yeah, I said, we kind of had that thing going on. You know, I kind of like what we're doing, and I just haven't listened to it for so long. And at that time, we did attempt a reunion with Ted Williams, actually, at that point, and it just fell flat on its face. It just was uninspired, and it just fell apart quickly. So years went by, so that's where Mike says I get my story mixed up a little bit. But that was my interest, even though years went by before we actually – I probably at that point just said, you know, that's the way it is. It's done. You know, forget it.
Right.
It's not in the cards and so forth. But then Rich and Mike just started jamming together out of – complete fun, you know, just to get together. And like you said, Rich hasn't been doing anything for a long time. And I think he just felt the itch to get his bass out and see if he still had his chops together. You know, he's actually a pretty good player. So he and Mike got together and they were kicking it off and they just invited me up for fun. And then really don't know how it turned into Dream Death. It just did, really, at that point.
Nice. But talking again about the production, you also catch a fair amount of separation between the bass and the guitars, at least in certain sections. You know, it's still very distorted and tightly doubling the guitars for the most part, but it's noticeable. I don't think it's as prominent as Ted Williams' bass was on the live Pittsburgh Sludge Metal, but that was actually a bit too upfront.
Right. But Rich is I think he's an excellent player. I think he's probably the most talented guy in Dream Death as far as a musician, and I think he needs to be heard. You know, he definitely adds an element to the music. He does little things that, not just playing along with the riff, but he'll add little things over the top and fills and so forth. And so it was important for us to have every instrument well represented.
Right. And I've also got to mention the cover art. It's got this sort of Gustav Klimt symbolist sort of feel, maybe a bit Aubrey Beardsley as well. You know, fantasy art, but not in the sense of Frazetta or Vallejo. This makes use of negative space, outlines that aren't exactly filled in, a nod towards religious iconography. It's very heady stuff. So what was the inspiration behind this?
Well, that was pretty much all. Mike was kind of handling the art. He had been working with some artists, and this is the one he chose, basically. And I'm not sure of the relation to the music. It looks cool and stuff. It seems that it's kind of controversial. Some people love it, some people hate it.
But,
we've seen some things, heard some nasty things, and we've heard some people that absolutely love it. So it's kind of...
It's probably the same people that hated Journey into Mystery. I like that cover, too. So.
Probably. I think we talked about that before. Yeah, probably.
Take it for what it's worth.
Yep, that's right.
You also chose to include neither pictures of the band or lyrics in the CD. It's basically all artwork and then the back cover. So why is this?
It came down to budget, really. Like I said, we're doing it all ourselves. And the studio time always takes longer than you think, and it took way longer. And we decided, obviously, the music is the most important thing here.
Right.
So, you know, every last dollar that we had, we spent on extra hours in the studio. It was a constant scheduling. It was when it's your dollar, you know, paying for that studio time. It's like crazy. But we didn't compromise like we felt maybe in the past we had when we were on limited budgets and so forth. We just decided, you know, let's go for it. If the lyric sheet's not included with the CD, so be it. You know, we want to get the music right.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Brian Lawrence of Dream Death. Coming up next, we talk about the album itself, and we're here on Third Eye Cinema.
I am the king of it all.
Hello, guess who you're listening to? You're listening to Jesper. I'm from DAD, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema Show.
Hi, this is Goff Minister. We have a new album out called Utopia, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Goff Minister. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
To put some echo on that.
Hi, this is Goff Minister. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hello, I'm Diego Valdez, singer from... sorry. Hello, I'm Diego Valdez, singer of... Hello, I'm Diego Valdez, singer of Helker, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Tushy from Otterhorn. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
You want to have an ad? Okay, let's... Hey, folks, you're listening to Third Eye Cinema, and I'm Fabian from The New Black. Keep on rocking.
That works. In our next segment, we get down to brass tacks and the album itself, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, here's a song off the aforesaid album, This Is Them.
They are here.
I mentioned Feast earlier. This is another zombie song.
Well, it's deceptively a zombie song. That one, some of the lyrics on the album I kind of left a little bit obscure. They mean several things to me, so I kind of left them to the listener's interpretation. That song, in a way, yeah, I was kind of trying to be clever and make it sound like a zombie song. It's not really. It's, without getting into it, it's just about the errors of mankind, I guess, or something. So.
I'm thinking, is he talking politics, but nah.
No, I am the least political person on the planet. It's not politics. It's just my viewpoints about
people,
humans, you know, right, and so forth. Yeah, right.
So what were you going for with them? Was this a sort of Guy de Maupassant thing, like the Horla, where imagined horrors turn out to be more internal horrors of the mind?
Now you're getting it. Yeah. I kind of had a double meaning on that one. Put it where people could take it as a straight horror story. And then, yeah, it goes a little deeper, leaving it up to interpretation. But, yeah, you're the first person that actually ever said that everybody thinks it's a straightforward horror song. So that's kind of cool.
The longest song on the album has a bit of an odd structure. From Inside the Wall takes about 3.5 minutes to get rolling, and then it goes back to that long acoustic intro for a minute or two, picks up again, and then drops back into a minute or two of sound effects. And I'm guessing that the song refers to the Lovecraft tale, Rats on the Walls?
No, a completely made up story. That one's a pretty much straight up horror story. It's just asked the question, is this guy really being haunted, or is everything just in his head? You know, it's a horror story either way. But the structure, yeah, that was important to me. That's the song I'm most proud of on the album, and yet I'm kind of disappointed because that's the one that seems to get the least amount of attention, I guess. I don't know. I guess when you put a longer song, sometimes it's harder for people to get into it, I guess. But that one I'm completely happy with. We had a lot of fun with the production of that one, overdubbing different sounds and so forth. And
that's actually funny because that was one of the songs I was kicking around to use.
Oh, okay. Well, that'd be great to me. I mean, that's the one I'm most proud of on the album. It's a difficult one to play live. We did play it one time, but probably won't be hearing that one again. And, you know, we had to start out with a little bit of the intro can and then start playing the song after that. But we opened up with that song. And it worked out pretty good, but it's a little difficult to pull off. So.
Yeah, so what was the inspiration behind the song structure? Were you actually following what you had written lyrically? Because it's very unusual.
Well, the lyrics came after, but I kind of had the flow of where I wanted the lyrics to go a little bit in my head. So, yeah, it stops for certain reasons. Like when you get to the middle and it's kind of mellow, creepy part, you know, like that's when the guy's ripping through the walls and looking through and then sees nothing. You know, he's expecting to find something and he finds nothing. And then so that's when the music gets quiet there and things like that. Yeah, it's kind of meant to go with the story a bit.
I got to admit, though, and you had mentioned this already, that other people were saying the same thing. I'm lost on the dystopian distress signal. What is that all about?
That one's just my viewpoint, another humanity viewpoint, I guess, or whatever. Basically, that, you know, we've got everything that we could possibly need, and yet we're still not the greatest.
Sad but true.
Basically.
But the sound effects and that you were doing with the guitars and everything, that was very unusual. And it's certainly not what I expected from Dream Death or Penance. So what was the genesis of this?
It really was that main riff just kind of kicked the whole thing off, what I'm going to call like the groovy riff, which would be near the beginning of the song, like on the verses. But then that riff pretty much drove the whole song, and it just kind of came together from there. When we hit the chorus by that time, you know, we're back into the Dream Death chord craziness. The guitar solo section, I wanted that section actually, there's a band I like called Universe Zero. There's a riff there that they kind of play similar on the cellos or something, but, you know, did it with guitar. And I wanted the guitar solo to be real noisy. And Terry came in, he made a couple cracks at it and wasn't working, and he's like, well, why don't I try a solo twice? You know, he went in and stood right in front of his amplifier getting feedback and things like that, and it turned out pretty cool.
And are you going to die up there and bludgeon as straightforward as they appear? You know, are you going all death metal on us?
Bludgeon, that one, that's the first time I ever wrote lyrics before a song, and that was actually written just as a little poem that I had. That one, unfortunately, basically about when the shit hits the fan, you know, how people react, and I don't not count myself in that either, you know, when the chips are all down, you know, who can you count on? But we were going to put a short instrumental, and if you look at the past history of Dream, Death, and Penance, you know, we've had these short instrumentals, and I'm like, you know, I'm sick of short instrumentals. So I actually had this poem in front of me, and I said, I'm going to try to write a song around this, just a short, intentionally short song, instead of an instrumental. So it kind of goes through the phases of changing with the lyrics. I was pretty happy with the result of that. I think Mike likes that song the best on the album. That one kind of worked out pretty cool.
You actually use more of a Zappa-esque Spreka song and portions of a few songs like Them and Bludgeon before return to the standard Dream Death choke growl vocal style. It may not literally be your speech patterns, but it reminds me of that. I guess it sounds a bit more like a grunge vocal than a metal one in those sections. So where was that coming from?
Like the opening of Them? That's just my singing voice. That's not really a good singing voice, I guess. Yeah, the opening of Them sung like that a little bit in Penance. I think we had a track called Wayfarers. Bludgeon, you're just hearing me doing my usual yelling without music behind it at the beginning and So that's actually what it would sound like if the music wasn't there.
I don't think it will surprise you to know that my favorite track is the one that sounds the most like the old material, which is Feast. But these are all really strong tracks, particularly for a, quote, comeback album, where two band members, so far as I know, haven't even been playing since the first Penance record.
Yeah. I guess we've been itching or something. When we did Feast, that was probably more of an intentional throwback than the rest of the tracks were. And that was the last song written, actually, for the album. Yeah. Mike kind of came up to me and said, you know, I was working on another track. And he's like, well, we got some slow or heavy ones like that. You know, we need kind of like a more up-tempo one. So I'm going to start working on this Feast song. But as far as being out of the game for so long, I don't know the answer. Not sure. Maybe that added a little bit of hunger to it rather than just being something we threw out. We were very worried. Well, I shouldn't say worried. That's not the right word. I can't think of the right word. We were aware that we didn't want to sound like a bunch of old guys playing music, you know. We would not be releasing this album if that's what we thought the end result was. It turned out we were happy with everything on there, so maybe other people think that.
No, not at all. That's actually what I was trying to get at. I was like, oh, this is kind of surprising. It's very strong. There's been a lot of comeback records lately from bands that haven't played for a long time, like Exhumer, for example, where it's like, wow, wait a minute. This is more aggressive than the last time I heard you guys, much less, okay, you got old and tired, which didn't happen at all. And that's what I was trying to tap into. I know you're selling not only the album, but T-shirts and some other merchandise on your Big Cartel site. I also understand that you were looking into re-releasing Journey into Mystery, but as expected, New Renaissance has more or less stymied the effort.
Yeah. We're still working on that. As it is right now, it doesn't look like it'll happen, but who knows? We're working on it.
Right.
We'll see what happens.
Now, I know you've been doing a few appearances around the tri-state area with occasional shows here and there over the last year or two, but you recently jumped on a few larger tickets, the local Winter's Wake, and more interestingly, Roadburn in Holland, where Mike actually gave a drum clinic. So what inspired you guys to take the leap and head overseas?
We got the invitation from Jess Osborne from Electric Wizard, because he was the curator of the Friday night. He picks all the bands that played Friday, and I guess he was an old fan of Dream Death, and he got in touch with Mike. Nobody's going to say no to Roadburn, I don't think.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a great time, great festival.
Did you run into the guys from Psy? Because I just spoke to them last night.
I did not. I saw their performance, but I didn't run into them. We ran into the guys from Cough.
Okay.
You know them. Yeah, just accidentally had dinner with them after we played. So.
How did you accidentally have dinner with them?
Well, there's like a tent set up for the band to go eat. It was the only open side of a table, and I sat down there and started talking. Had a good time. They were nice guys.
All right. So do you have any plans to tour locally, maybe hit the New York, New Jersey area this summer?
Well, not at the moment, no. The only thing we have on the schedule right now is the Days of the Dune Festival in June, Milwaukee. But haven't really planned out any other shows. It's just difficult for us to get together all the time. There will never be a tour, you know, I can guarantee that. But the festivals have been kind to us. It's just more better from a logistical standpoint for us.
Right.
Easier to schedule something way ahead. That's all we have right now. We're looking at a couple other festivals. It's tough with everybody's schedules, but we're trying to. So
do you have anything else you'd like to plug, or do you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, geez, you're asking the wrong guy here. I don't even know the addresses myself. That's the Big Cartel/Dream Death is our merchandise page. And then we have if you just search for the Facebook page, that's basically where we put all of our latest news on there. So you could probably help me better than you probably know better than I do. I'm not the guy that runs those pages. It's Rich usually takes care of those.
Well, with that, Brian, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here once again on Third Eye Cinema. And here's hoping we have you back on next year to talk your third studio album.
That would be great. Yeah, thanks for having me back.
All right. So, again, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for all the help you've given us and really appreciate it. All right, take care, Gene. Bye-bye.
Brian asked me to mention these links, the Dream Death Facebook at https.www.facebook.com/DreamDeathSludge, and the band's direct sales site at http://DreamDeath.BigCartel.com. And to close out our interview with Brian, we have another track off Somnium Excessum. This is from Inside the Walls. Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Brian Lawrence. Next time on Week 58 at Third Eye Cinema, Mariah Kawashima and Dr. McCampbell of the great Japanese black metal band Psy. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listen or download at your convenience. And next week.
Okay. Here are you, Dugout.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Planning a spring break getaway? Well, with the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on any purchase you make today and every day. And those miles add up to get you closer to that trip to paradise. Every vanilla soy latte, double miles. Every time you pump gas, double miles. Even when you buy a set of monogram beach towels, yep, double miles. You earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, and then you go. The Capital One Venture Card, the card that takes you there. What's in your wallet?
Capital One Bank USA NA.